year anyway, because the way the holidays line up with between like Christmas and New Year's, especially if Christmas lands in the middle of a week.
Right.
Then you take a day off the front and a day off the back, and you get a whole week pretty much for right. 2 or 3 days, that kind of thing. Didn't work out that way this year, but whatever. Kids out of school. Works out. And how about yourself? I just got you running?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't have any extra days off or anything, just the norm.
Huh?
And the thing about it is it's slow right now, so mainly but the position I'm in now, I got to worry about getting everything ready for taxes at the end of the year and all kind of other crap. So I had to take a course to learn how to do 1099s and 941s and all kind of other shit, which I've never had to do before.
In my experience, they like run off some sheets and hand them to you. You're like, okay, what do I do with this?
Well, the account has me all freaked out about who to get 1099s to, because apparently anybody that provides a service that is a sole proprietorship, that isn't a C corp or S corp or anything like that, you have to do a 1099 for. So like the guy that sharpens our blades, I gotta do a 1099 for him. Mm. It's just a lot more convoluted than it should be.
It's government for you.
Yeah.
It's like, I provide a service that adds value. I will trade you cash or chickens. And you say, I've got chickens or gold coins or whatever. I will trade you that value for value. And then there's a government that comes in and is like, I got an idea. Let me make this very difficult.
Right.
And expensive to for you to do.
Because remember back when, it was real popular to push the flat tax idea. It would have been the size of a postcard, and that's it.
Yeah.
Fill this out. How
but
many
you know why they don't
here?
Do that? It's because everybody thinks it's an upside down pyramid, right? It shouldn't be able to stand up, like on its point, but it does because everybody just kind of believes it should. Mm-hmm. Taxes are very quite simple. If you make X, then you pay X percentage of X.
Right.
Period. The billions of pages of tax code are ways to not pay that. That's all it is.
Ways to get to change your percent.
Right. Is ways to change the percentages in one way or another. And so the corporations are going to change your percentage, so they have to pay less, so they can report having paid more out because they have a bigger expense. And then right. You get it, and you're like, well, I have child care, so I get to write off this. And it's like all these back and forths and stuff. If they did a flat tax, everybody pays 10%. So if you make $1 million, you pay
100% of it. Right.
You make $1 billion, whatever. You make $10, you pay $1, whatever. But if they do that, then there's a whole bunch of stroking in the back rooms that don't get done. And they like that stroking. Well, up until recently. Now they're a bit scared of the stroking. But still, they're still stroking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, welcome everybody to... How the hell did I not write this down?
Episode something.
65.
There
dude.
We go.
Episode 65 of the Scary Dad podcast, in which we're going to talk about horrible massacres. Let's get the New Year started off right.
Yeah. Start off in the right mood, right frame of mind.
It is the 8th of January, 2018. We said Happy New Year before, and we're saying it again, but Happy New Year.
Happy
we'll
New
keep
Year.
Saying it all the way through. And, without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and get into old business. What happens on the 8th of January? Well, on this date in 871, King Alfred the Great leads the West Saxon army to repel the Viking invasion. So, I've actually read a couple different series of books and a lot of stuff on the Vikings. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting, and in a lot of cases, it's quite funny. There's a lot of death, but it's still somewhat comical. So basically, the Vikings were seafaring peoples, and they were largely traders and stuff like that. Well, they were pagans, and they figured out that if they floated up the coast of Britain, which was a Christian country, they could raid these monasteries and get like all kinds of basically free gold. They could just like float up, get on their boats, row into a town. There was no garrison. There was nothing really that would stop them.
Right.
So they started raiding in, and they'd steal livestock, they'd steal women, they'd steal children. Whatever they could get their hands on, and then they'd burn the rest and just like float off with the middle finger in the air. And that's what most people think of the Vikings, is just kind of in general kind of like coastal pirates, right? But in reality, they wanted the British Isles. They wanted the whole thing. They mm-hmm. fought, you know, the north and the south, and they went up into Ireland and Scotland, and they were trying to take over the island. They were trying to invade it.
Right.
And basically, Britain was divided up into several kingdoms. It was very Game of Thrones. And all of these different kingdoms had peasant armies. They didn't really have what you would call a standing army. Uh-huh. And, you know, they had, the nobles would call up their peasants, and the peasants would outfit in whatever leather they'd have, and there were pitchforks or, you know, just wooden sticks. The Vikings were very ruthless, first of all, and they were well-trained. And they did this thing called a shield wall, where each man would stand with the shield forward, and it was, like, tapped to the shield next to him on both sides.
Okay, like the Spartans used to do.
Right, pretty much. And then they'd walk forward, and they have a long sword, and which, you know, they had a sax and a lang sax, which is a long sword and a short sword. They'd walk up with their short swords drawn, and they'd poke underneath and basically stab you in the balls. And that was their tactic.
Yeah.
And that shield wall would just run over the defenders, and they'd just smash everything. Nothing could really defend against them. And every kingdom fell one by one, and you'd have either a puppet government installed by the Earl, which mm-hmm. was called a Jarl. The guy in charge would install a Saxon prince or something, or noble, and call him the king of whatever, and every kingdom fell, and they fell like dominoes. But it was actually in the south, on the west side of Britain, Alfred the Great, he managed to be able to buy time. And what he did was he built a series of defenses up and down the rivers, so the Vikings couldn't travel up, and they couldn't travel over land, because he'd have garrisons and stuff built. And he basically pretty much saved England from being completely overtaken.
Okay.
And he slowly but surely repelled them over time, and eventually he was the king of like the unified island for a short time.
Okay.
He died shortly after he won, but it's really, really interesting to see like what you read about, and like history just kind of touches the Vikings.
Yeah.
I think especially U.S. schools, they don't
learn much about
them. They don't like the Vikings, because the Vikings were here first, so you don't get your really nice Columbus discovery story. You get a bunch of Vikings landing here and
pillaging.
Yeah. So, if you ever get a chance to check out some Viking history, though, it's awesome. It's really cool. They just did their own thing, man. All right, 1790, the first State of the Union address by Mr. George Washington. We're going to have one of those coming up quite soon.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That'll be interesting.
At this point in time, we'll be interested to see what comes out of his mouth. Because you never know.
Bigly. Everything's bigly. I made Bitcoin go to 20 grand. That'll be his.
So waiting for that bubble to pop.
Yeah, people have been waiting for that bubble to pop. You know, it started off as a quarter.
Yeah.
Then it went to a dollar, and they're like, that bubble's going to pop. And it went to 100, then 500, and then a 700, and 1,000. And over the last 10 years, it's increased multiple thousand
percent. Okay,
well, even if it goes from 20 back down to 10, if it hits a floor and divides by half, it's still up like 800 or 900% from right. the first of the year. So
I was reading an article the other day, the two guys that had sued what's his name? The Facebook founder, Zuckerberg. They whenever they won their lawsuit and they got their settlement, they took 10% of their settlement and put it in bitcoins, and they just became billionaires.
Yeah.
They just became billionaires. They got that out of the way. Wouldn't that be nice?
Winklesloss or whatever their names
yeah.
are.
Yep.
Okay, on this date in 1815, the War of 1812, Andrew Jackson's forces defeat the British at the Battle of New Orleans. A lot of battles in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there were.
1835, the U.S. national debt is at zero for the only time in its history. Andrew Jackson paid off all the debt.
Never see that shit again.
Yeah. On this date in 1867, African American men were granted the right to vote. Then had a hard time doing it, but that's a whole different story. And in 1964, Lyndon Johnson declares war on poverty. How'd that work out?
Don't get me started in that old thing, the war on poverty thing.
Oh, shit, I know. What if the government declares anything, it's exactly the opposite of what it is.
It was their way of keeping people in poverty.
Yep.
This begin a cycle. To survive, they have to keep voting for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
That's power.
They're generations of people. No, three generations that have never worked and just been dependent on the government the whole time. It's just sick.
Yep, and it just continually cycles.
To survive, they have to keep... They don't know any different.
On this date in 1935, Elvis Presley was born.
Big.
Throw up a drink to...
big day in history.
Yeah.
I love that part in Devil's Rejects where the guy starts bitching about Elvis Presley dying right after Groucho Marx. And the cop is like, "Don't you ever disgrace the name of Elvis Aaron Presley in my presence again."
"1938. Remember Mr. Bob Eubanks?
Yeah.
Baseball guy? Wasn't he Mr. Baseball or something?
That was Bob Euchre. Bob Eubanks was a game show host, wasn't he?
Okay, yeah, because Euchre is on a different history show.
Yeah, Bob Euchre's the baseball guy.
Yeah, Euchre's the baseball guy. Bob Eubanks is...
game show host.
Price is Right.
Yeah, no, it's Bob Barker. Eubanks was a different game show. I'm trying to remember which one it was. Damn it, which game show
I knew I should have written it down. Anyway, not a big deal, but Bob Eubanks. And then the other guy is...
Wait, was he... Let's Make a Deal? Card Sharks.
That's
what he was. He was on Card Sharks.
Okay.
And he's on the
Euchre is on another history segment in like two or three shows.
Euchre was awesome. He was the voice on all the Major League movies. And,
yeah. That. Okay, 1942. Stephen Hawking. Smart guy trapped in that messed up body.
Yes.
This date in 1947, Mr. David Bowie. And on this date in 1967, Mr. R. Kelly. I can't even think about R. Kelly without the Chappelle song.
Not just that. I don't know if you saw that recent... I'm going to show you the recent video he made where it's supposed to be a serious video, but it's called Real Talk. And it's essentially him bitching at his girlfriend. R. Kelly's gone downhill a lot.
From trapped in the closet?
Oh, yeah. He's gone downhill a lot. It's sad to see.
Trapped in the closet. Okay, notable deaths on this date in 1642, Mr. Galileo. Heliocentrism. He said the sun was the center of the universe. And
got an interesting bit of new business that actually mentions him tonight.
He was considered a heretic for it. He was excommunicated from the church.
Right.
For saying, like, whoa, check it out. It actually revolves this way instead of this other way. Heresy.
When you think about it, you know, that was like 500 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. that people had no fucking clue of how anything any of that worked.
Nobody has any clue of it now.
Right.
I mean,
it's just, it's...
Me and my friends would get into these philosophical discussions, and it's not... You know, we mentioned it in before, of like the concept of being like anti-science, and it's like, well, I'm not anti-science, because I'm obviously sitting here in an air-conditioned room. Medical science has fixed my knee. I'm not, you know, I don't not believe in science, but there are... It's the appeal to authority. Somebody can come out and say, well... I'm going to claim science on this statement, and you are then compelled to believe them without question.
Right.
And nobody does their own research. And when people do their own research, they're considered kooks or deniers or, you know, weirdos and
right.
that kind of stuff. So it's almost gotten to like religious cult style stuff where you're just like, well, science says, which by the way, did you hear? And we're recording this a couple weeks ago, so this is probably blown over. It's not news anymore, but the Trump administration removed several words from the CDC's budgets. Vulnerable, science-based, fact-based, transgender, something else. But it's just like all of these random words. It's like you can't use these in your official documents. So like the CDC's like, okay. They suggested alternatives that work that mean the same thing, but you can't use these. It's just government doublespeak. And people were all like everybody's like, what? How can that possibly be? Blah 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 blah. I'm like, dude, remember when the Obama administration told the Pentagon they could no longer use the word jihad or radical or Islam or terrorist in their official documents, even though we're having some adventures in the Middle East fighting these very people.
Right.
But it's just back and forth. It's I think of the government, dude, and I think, remember that True Faith video from New Order? It was one of the first videos on MTV, and basically you've got these green painted purple men, and they're jumping on trampolines, smacking each other in the face. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the song. It's just a weird visual. And I always think of that as government. It's like neither one of them fall down, neither one of them turn their head too far. They just take the slap and then slap and then slap and then slap. It's like, as long as they're slapping each other, I guess we're happy down here. And that is old business. You want to take a break before new business?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right. Here is a word from a sponsor from yesteryear. We'll be right back.
Oh, Frederick, are you all right?
Yes. Would you excuse me for 1 minute, dear?
Oh, of course, Doctor.
Igor? May I speak to you for a moment?
Of course.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
No, no, up here. Oh,
thank you.
Now, that brain that you gave me, was it Hans Delbrück's?
No.
Ah. Good. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla? Is that what you're telling me? Quick,
lead us in with some new business.
All right, just so we can continue with the Galileo tie-in. A shark was recently found, one of your favorite subjects.
Mm-hmm.
This shark is believed to have been born in the 1500s. This shark is the oldest living vertebrate on the planet. It was alive during the time of Galileo.
Do they know how they know that? Is it because of its
because
size?
Because of its size, and they can do carbon dating also. They can, like, scrape parts of it off, parts of its skin off, because they caught it alive, took video of it and everything, measured the size. But it's believed it could be up to 512 years old.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy, and it's healthy. It's not like it's dying or anything like that. You know, it's going to continue living. But this particular kind of shark...
It was a Greenland shark, right?
It's in Greenland, correct. And because of the cold weather, they grow very slow. Their metabolism is a lot different. They don't actually mature to breeding age until 136.
Wow.
So it's not uncommon to find them old. They have one that they actually carbonated once that was 320 years old or something. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You think about this animal, it's ugly as sin.
Oh, yeah.
It looks its age. I'll put it that way. But it's... It's pretty crazy, man.
Speaking of sharks, have you seen there's a video? It's very, very short, but it's titled "The Closest Encounter with the Great White Shark" that with in parentheses that survived. And there's
when
like
it comes up from behind him.
Yeah, there's this dude, and he's just sitting like he's a diver, and he's just like sitting on a rock, and the water's kind of murky behind him, and this huge great white just comes out of nowhere and like kind of. Like, if he hadn't moved his head just right, he probably would have just nibbled his head right off. It's just like, the shark just kind of, like, noses down and kind of snaps. And the guy moves his head just in the right. And great whites, there's a lot of people who have been killed by great whites because they just bite their heads off.
Right.
Because they come in, they see the bubbles, and they kind of just nudge at it to see what it is. But even a gentle bite from a great white.
Yeah, it's razor sharp teeth.
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show before.
It's like scratching yourself with a razor knife.
Years and years ago, my wife and I were in San Diego, and there was all of these like Mexican guys, and we're not talking about Mexican Americans. We're talking about like guys who came up the from Tijuana, and they're selling their wares.
They didn't
on
go
the
to
beach.
High school, take Spanish.
Or yeah, they're like from Mexico, and so some of the stuff they're selling is not quite what you might call legal. And if it's not a great white, then it's another kind of white tip shark. But I bought a shark tooth necklace, and the tooth is about a quarter inch long, maybe about half an inch from top to bottom. And I put that thing on. It's on a little leather thong, and I put it on my neck, and I noticed like my neck was itching, and I reached up and I scratched, and like my fingers come back bloody.
Come on.
It was so sharp that it cut my neck in like three places that I didn't even feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was just within just like a couple minutes of putting this thing on my neck. Of course, I still have it. It's in a little box in my office somewhere. I will not put that thing on again because the cuts were gnarly.
Right.
I mean, but they were, it's like razor cuts. Like, and you can imagine if that thing was like three times, four times as big and like 100 of them. It doesn't take a whole lot of force to remove your head from your body.
Right. I mean, you know, I was thinking the other day, there was a guy I used to be friends with. His name was Billy also, actually. This was back when I did nefarious things. And he was a very nefarious person. At one time in his life, he was a boat captain. And at one time in his life, he poked sharks. That's what he did for a living. And he used to have these Polaroid pictures of from when they'd go out. And there'd be like 20 just ginormous tiger sharks. And he'd sit on the back of them holding the mouths open. And when I think about how big those sharks were, to imagine the biggest great white, and he was a big dude, and these things looked humongous around him. I mean, the mouths were just gigantic. Some scary shit, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. Like,
I understand people that get afraid of going into the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad would tell me the story, and you've talked about on the oil rig. We probably talked about it on our shark thing, where they're on a rig, and he's like maybe, he's on a platform maybe like 40 or 50 feet up off the water where the guys would go down there and fish.
Yeah, we go down to the plus 10, about 10 foot off the water, at the bottom of them, and fish from there.
Yeah, and he said he's sitting there just like staring down, and there's this big school of something, and it's so big that it's coloring the water blue.
Right.
And then there's this hammerhead that would live at the bottom.
We caught a hammerhead offshore one time.
You know, but it was a great hammerhead. It was one of the big ones. And he said from like 40 feet up, the thing looked like it was like the length of my arm. And it would just cut into this school of fish and just cut a big tear out of it. And then the water would turn bloody and frothy for a second. And then it would all kind of like go back up. And the shark would just flop and flip and flop and just like take giant chunks out of the school of fish.
Right.
And he's up 40 feet up, and it looks like, it looks big from up there.
Oh, dude, we used to see, because where I spent most of my time offshore, I was there for almost 3 years, it was 800 foot of water. And we'd fish about, because to pull a large fish up this high was hard, dude. Mm-hmm. About 300 feet down, we'd fish. And we'd catch some just monstrous animals. Whale sharks used to migrate past our rig every year. We'd see them pass by. And I remember the world record marlin was caught. This is a state record of Louisiana. The marlin was caught at our platform.
Oh, wow.
Those things are huge, man. You'd see all these, you know, Jack Prevail, all of a sudden, they'd swim in schools. And they'd take off. And the next thing you know, a marlin would break the water. And that was chasing them. And it was just... I used to love that, dude.
Oh.
And we had sea turtles come by every once in a while. We had a pelican stayed on the rig for a while. We'd catch cut bait and feed them and everything. Yeah, we used to see some cool stuff out there, dude.
Monsters down there.
Lots of black tip sharks. The hammerhead, somebody called it, was like 6.5 foot long, about. But, dude, we'd catch them and get them up. You can't just walk up like a fish and pull the hook out of my mouth. It's some work. Yeah, it was some work, dude. Basically a 4 foot cheater pipe is what we'd use to knock them out. Yeah. All right, moving on. You ever heard of a guy named Blake Libel?
I don't know.
Blake Libel was a young, he was. He's still alive, but he was a young director and graphic artist in Hollywood. He came from an incredibly rich family. And his biggest graphic novel he ever wrote was something called Syndrome, which was actually supposed to be turned into a television series at one time. But it was a horror graphic novel that he wrote. The cover of his first issue, it shows a baby with a scalp head. And the brain sticking out. You can see one of the pages has a decapitated woman in the bed. It was supposed, I've never read it, but I've heard about it. Well, he's about to go on trial in a few weeks for the murder of his girlfriend. Apparently, I read this story about this guy. It is a long article to learn about this guy. But him and his brother both moved to Hollywood. Their dad was worth a gajillion dollars. So they came in, they drove in with their Ferraris. They were already set. You know, they were able to jump right into the Hollywood scene. They found his girlfriend scalped. Okay? Totally scalped. Not just, like, cut. But it was an incision made around her head. And the whole scalp was peeled off. She had less than a tablespoon of blood in her body. He had drained all the blood from the woman's body. And he was sleeping in the next room. And the cops woke him up. And he essentially said... You know, they were like, your girlfriend's in the next room dead. And he was basically like, well, I guess you better find out who killed her. He went nuts. It is a crazy story to read about. Wow. This dude. Highly recommend the article. It's put out by the Hollywood Reporter. But yeah, just going through the underground poker scene he was involved with. He at one point thought his brother was in deep debt with gamblers. And that the mafia was trying to set his family up. Because the mafia wanted to... obtain his inheritance, so he thought the mafia was trying to kill his dad so that the inheritance can come through and they could kill him and take his money. It is a crazy story, dude.
Wow.
Gotta check it out.
I definitely
it is,
will.
It is almost Manson worthy in the way it's set up. Yeah, that dude had some real issues. And finally, last thing I'll talk about, you know how my feelings are about the Crow remake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alex Proyas, who originally directed the original Crow, he came out on Facebook. No, everything is still planning on going on. Those that don't know the background, March 31st, 1993, Brandon Lee died during the filming of the original Crow. They finished the movie. Proyas actually does not take credit for his work in the movie because he wanted it to be Brandon's movie. He wanted, you know, all focus to be on that. So he is very much against the remake because of the memory of Brandon Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he took to Facebook and just wrote this huge monologue detailing why he thought it was a bad idea and didn't agree with it. But James Barr has come out and said he's backing it. He's happy about it. So with him coming through, though, it's his baby. You know, mm-hmm. He's the one that created the Crow. I'm not too much off board. I still don't care for the casting because they're still planning on doing Jason Momoa as Eric Draven. But yeah, the original director has come out and said that he is not giving his okay.
Yeah, I watched The Crow not too long ago. Just on a whim. My wife and I were like, I have the DVD. But we were just flipping through Netflix, and she's like, "You want to watch The Crow?" I was like, "Sure." And just put it on there. And The Crow is one of those that you can watch it straight through, and it's a great movie. But you can also have it on in the background. You can watch parts of it. You can come in the middle and watch it to the end. Like, so having seen it probably two or three times in the theater when it came out, plus having the DVD and the VHS, and, you know, I never really, I don't think I ever saw any of the sequels, but The Crow was always one of those things that was kind of like, it was like a generational thing. Like, this is our thing.
Right.
It's like, you don't...
Including the soundtrack and everything.
Yeah, you don't... It's... Like, I didn't watch the sequels because it felt almost like it was trashing the memory.
Right.
You know, of Eric Draven. And, of, you know, Eric Draven and Brandon Lee. Because at the end, Draven goes home.
Yeah.
He, you know... So he gets his revenge. He kills all the bad guys. The Crow takes his soul to the other side. And he goes...
He can rest in peace now.
Right. So there is no sequel. There's no need for one.
But the original comic book series was 4 books. And that's it. It was over.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the movie.
And, I don't know. It's just one of those, like, it just doesn't see, but it's been a long, long time. And so maybe a new generation can appreciate it.
Yeah, like I said, my only thing is, I don't want the new generation not to know what Brandon Lee originally did. Mm-hmm. I don't want Momoa to become The Crow to a whole new generation. That's my only issue with it.
Yeah. I don't like the casting. I like Momoa. I like
him. Yeah, but he's not Eric Draven. Look at that action figure of Eric Draven up there.
Yeah.
This is not Momoa. He's too big.
He's too big, and he's kind of just a little bit too charismatic. And
he's tanned.
He's too much like Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
He's too much like The Rock, which I like The Rock, too.
Yeah, cast in the right place.
He's cool in his... he's cool as himself, but he's not cool as somebody who's like...
A serious, dark character.
Right.
It wouldn't work. Definitely.
I don't know. We'll see. The best you can do is not see it. That's with all this Star Wars stuff. Everybody's like, "Oh, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I'm like, dude, you paid your $8. You saw a movie you didn't like. Shut up. I enjoyed it a lot. So, like, it's not that hard. I mean, yeah, you sit there and be like, this sucks. I mean, I've talked at length about how I hated the prequels and stuff. But you know what I didn't do?
You didn't try to discourage everybody else from watching them.
I'm like, yeah, I was just like, dude, I didn't like it. It's not my bag. And
that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get on Rotten Tomatoes and try to use a bunch of bots to bring the rating down so much that nobody's going to want to see the movie. I'm sure you saw that.
I did see that. That's ridiculous. But, and it's like what I said before we started the show is, you can't make a Star Wars movie that everybody's going to like. Because a lot of people are going to look... A lot of people are going to love it, and a lot of people are not. And probably for the same reasons. And like with Last Jedi, like I mentioned before, this is a new story about a new cast of people. Right? So... You cannot have... Episode, you know, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi... just rewritten, overwritten. Carrie Fisher's gone. Harrison Ford is old. He's not, right. You know. Mark Hamill can't do all those flips and flops anymore. You know, Alec Guinness is gone.
Well, the thing about it is, if you have a series of movies that spans, you know, almost 40 years, it has to evolve into absolutely. New characters. Same thing with television shows, you know, except for The Simpsons. It's a cartoon. They don't have to age.
Right.
But it's just a fact of life. Things have to evolve and move forward.
So, watching this, and again, I think a lot of the people, maybe, you know, I don't know. I remember when Force Awakens came out, and I was sitting there being like, I wouldn't say picky about it, but it was just, there was too many kind of just simple coincidences, and it was just like, what are the odds that the new Jedi and the stormtrooper and the pilot, they crash land on the planet she happens to be on that also happens to have the Millennium Falcon on it. You know, like, what are the odds of this little thing occurring? It's like, okay. Then I look over at my, at the time, 4-year-old daughter, and she's just like jaw dropped, just absolutely amazed.
Right.
coolest thing she's ever seen in her life. And I'm like, I get it. I'm doing this wrong. So I put my 5-year-old glasses on, and it was freaking awesome.
Right, just open your mind up a little
bit. Like, okay, I'm thinking too hard. And everybody talking about hating the Ewoks. Shit, dude, I was 8. I thought the Ewoks were pretty cool. You know? Like, I didn't think they were, like, Boba Fett cool, but, you know, I thought they were fun anyway.
Right.
You know, whatever. How's to know that I was a heretic? Is that old business or new business?
Is it for new business? Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's take another quick break, and we'll come back with the meat of the show. And by meat, cannibal Holocaust massacres.
Just death.
Be right back.
Dude, do you want to see something really scary?
It's like when you're sitting at home late at night reading some scary story or something, and the dog just hops up and, like, we runs out of the room for no reason.
Definitely to check under the bed at that point.
So who said it best? Rob Zombie or Samuel L. Jackson?
That's a tough one.
Welcome to Bright
Night. Hey, this is Billy.
And this is Scott.
And this is the Scary Dad Podcast.
Join us as we talk about all things scary.
Imagine, dude, if you were still conscious for a few seconds, knowing your head was no longer attached to your body.
So, have you ever played around with a Ouija board?
You know, no, I haven't. And in, like, true poltergeist fashion, it was built on a graveyard.
Oh, man. If it's scary, cool, or something we find just plain interesting, we talk about it.
Every Monday, available on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher Radio, and on our website at scarydad.com.
Truly.
All right, let's get into it. What you got for us, Scotty?
All right. Well, the other day, I found an article about the Boyd Massacre. Are you familiar with the Boyd Massacre?
I am not. I'm about to be, though.
It was this isn't going to sound impressive, because you probably don't have anything to compare by, but it was the largest massacre of Europeans in New Zealand ever in history. You may be wondering how many massacres of Europeans they had in New Zealand, but apparently back in the day, it was known as, you know, they had cannibals in New Zealand. They didn't play. Well, the Boyd was a convict ship out of Britain, and would sail back and forth to Australia to drop off. As you know, Australia is kind of inhabited by all the convicts from Britain.
Yeah.
So, during this particular voyage, it had about 70 passengers on the boat. And included with this group was a young man named T. Ara, or Tara is what they called him, known to the crew as George, who happened to be the son of a Maori chief from Wangaroa, which was a group of people in New Zealand. He was a prince. He was just working his way. He had made a trip to Europe, and he was working his way back just for passage. He wasn't a convict or anything. Well, apparently, once he got on this boat to finish his voyage, they didn't really know he was a prince. They didn't really give a shit. And they commenced to beating his ass. Well, they get down to Australia. Word gets back to New Zealand that the king's son had got his ass whipped by these people on this boat. There's different things saying, you know, what happened. Some people say that he didn't want to work. He was, you know, kind of acting... acting kind of uppity, and they wanted to set him in his place. Other people say the cook had lost some of the silverware and blamed it on him for stealing it. There's different things, but one way or another, word got back to the Maori folks. And whenever the boat docked in New Zealand, the Maori went ahead and got in disguise, dressed up like some Europeans, took their boats out to the boat and killed all 70 people. Okay. So they go, they kept, I think, 3 people alive. They killed a total between 66 and 70. And they ate them. They ate the folks. So then they go ahead and leave. Word gets back to England that something has happened. A whaling ship in the area decides, hey, they're not going to do that to our countrymen. We're going to go take care of business. Well, they unfortunately heard it was a different tribe of people. They show up, go to a different tribe about 20 kilometers south of where they were supposed to be, and they started killing those people. Well, they started to fight with the wrong folks. They came back, and they ended up killing all the people on the whaling vessel also.
So the wrong people were tough, too, and they just killed the whaling people?
Yeah. So yeah, it just ended up being just this insane massacre where, you know, if you read all the way through it, because of the misinterpretations and, you know, people trying to get revenge on the wrong people, it ended up being, you know, almost 200 people died total.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I always wondered what would happen. And I also wonder sometimes if, like, history has been altered so that, for whatever, but of course then that would, like, what would happen if, like, the Indians, like, looked out and they saw, like, Christopher Columbus's ships and they're like, that doesn't look good. Let's go, let's go build a fire and shoot out some flaming arrows and just take care of some business real fast. You know, like, who would ever know? In Europe, they're like, you're not going to find that passage you're looking for. And they never come back.
Right. Where yeah, they just assume where, that the where, boat.
Yeah, where are they going to look?
Right.
You know? Which, for what it's worth, they knew that the world was round back then. They were looking for a passage to India. They weren't looking to see if they were going to fall off the edge of it.
Yeah, they weren't, yeah.
But they didn't know what was past there. There were certain distances they had not gone before. That's
it
what
essentially
was.
Essentially, it would be like us taking a spaceship going out and trying to see what's out there.
Right. So, and if the spaceship never, you know, we like lost contact with it, it just crashed on Mars. We don't know.
Right.
But, you know, how long is it going to take us to find and get a salvage vessel out there, you know? And even then, on the entirety of Mars, where would we even look? You know? That's crazy, though. So what ended up happening to these guys? They're obviously not in charge now.
No. Well, the actual tribe itself doesn't exist anymore. They, once everything was over, essentially what happened is, once the mistake was found out that the Europeans tried to get revenge on the wrong tribe, to save face, everything was just kind of forgotten about.
Ah.
It was kind of like, never mind, our bad. Sorry about that. And everybody just kind of moved on. But the massacre is still, it happened in December. So, you know, of the date of the massacre, there's still ceremonies held and remembrances and everything. And there's books out there about the Boy Massacre, you know, just detailing through everything. And there's a children's book about it. It's New Zealand. It's a real big deal out in that end of the world, of course.
So do you know why we live in Texas instead of in Mexico?
Shoot.
A massacre.
I'm sure it has something to do with somebody dying.
Well then. So, knowing that Santa Ana was coming north, Santa Ana had pretty much given out orders that you have to stand down and there would be no quarter. No quarter means no surrender. We're not taking any prisoners. If you fight, we're going to kill you. Well, most of us living in Texas, we went through Texas history in like junior high, and I actually lived not too far from a place called Goliad, which is from here, it's about a 4-hour drive. And there's a Spanish mission there. And the country down there is pretty full of Spanish missions, like really nice, well-preserved ones that from, you know, 300 or 400 years ago.
Yeah.
But there was a mission down there, and there was a garrison of Texan troops. And those Texan troops were ordered to go first to the Alamo and then to Houston. Sam Houston was trying to gather troops from across Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't remember the exact reason, but the Mexican army came up on Goliad and told him to surrender. Throw down your arms and surrender. And so they did. They put down their guns. They all marched out front and put up their hands. So the Mexican army dressed them down, yelled at them for a while, you know, basically set up a prison camp for them. And they were there for a couple of days. And then one morning, these guys, thinking they're going to be marched down back into Mexico as prisoners of war, get marched out into the field out in front of the mission, and the Mexicans open fire and basically kill 400 men. There are very few survivors. The ones that did survive, like, there was one guy who got shot like 4 or 5 times. And we're talking like, this is pre-mini ball. This is like musket shot. He got, and Santa Ana's army is something like 2,000 strong. like reports at the Alamo was that it was like four or five, but they figure that it's somewhere between two and three in reality. So you got like, you know, a couple thousand guys shooting at 400. It's not hard for a couple of them to get hit twice or three times. One guy got shot three or four times and he managed to crawl and fall into the river and float away. And he actually, but very, very few people made it out of Goliad. And that's why they fought so hard at the Alamo. It's because they knew
what would happen.
They knew that they couldn't do anything. They either fought and died fighting, or they surrender and just die.
Right.
So that's why they fought so hard at the Alamo. And
they had nothing to lose.
And the Alamo was kind of a fallacy too, because they had been ordered to Houston as well, but they chose not to. They chose to try to defend the garrison there. But everybody was so enraged. People who had been sympathetic to the Mexican side were now just like, these are monsters.
Right.
And, you know, just walk these guys out in the field and just shoot them all. So then they got to the Alamo, and the Texans in the Alamo were like, screw that. We're going to hold out as long as we can and go down fighting. And it was those two, it was, Goliad was the inspiration for it, for the guys at the Alamo to fight really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But they stalled them at the Alamo long enough that Sam Houston managed to gather his troops and have them organized enough to be able to fight them here in Houston. Okay. and ultimately defeat them. So, because of Goliad, that's why we live in Texas now.
The border moved south.
Yeah. The border had been pretty far north.
Yeah.
And they said, nope, it's the Rio Grande. Get your ass on the other side. Then Mexican, Santa Anna was wounded in the Battle of San Jacinto here. And he lost his leg, actually. And he went back pretty much in disgrace to Mexico. But the Mexican government did not accept the fact that they'd been beaten. So they kind of just like poked at the borders, you know, around for a long time. And then finally Andrew Jackson's men basically surrounded Mexico City and told them, either stop it or we're taking you over too.
Right.
And we'll push our southern border down to yours. we'll border up with Guatemala if you don't stop it. we'll annex you. And that's when they finally were like, okay, it's over. But march them out into a field, hit them with musket shots. Rough way to go.
Well, the thing about it is,
those are bone crushers.
I kind of left a bunch of massacres out, but massacres during war is acts of war.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at the Holocaust. I mean, that's
true.
Unfathomable. So that's why I kind of left those out, because
I would say that there are certain things. There's certain things that kind of qualify in that, like, well, the Holocaust, I don't think would count, because that was
individual incidents during the Holocaust.
That was a sustainable operation over time.
Right, but certain incidents during the Holocaust.
Yeah, like the liquidation of the ghetto and that kind of stuff. But no, I remember when I was in junior high and we went on a field trip to Goliad. And they not marched us, but like had us line up, us and like several other schools, walked us out into the field, and they're like, look around. This is where it happened, right here. And you look around and there's nowhere to go. You're just like in wide open space.
Right.
And it's like maybe a couple hundred yards, there's a tree line that borders the river. Otherwise, you're getting popped.
Right. It's an eerie feeling to be somewhere where something like that has happened.
Right.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Rosewood?
I don't think
the
so.
Big massacre. It was the. It was a free town of former slaves, and a white woman got raped. She blamed it on a black man. They went through and killed every black person in Rosewood. You know, because they just went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
In my hometown, the same thing happened. It was actually called the Freetown Massacre, and there's still houses there to this day that you can see the bullet holes, where the people came from the neighboring town of New Iberia and just killed everybody.
Wow.
And it was a similar incident. And, you know, I've been to some of these houses and everything where you can see, you know, everybody in the house was killed.
Like, you know, just like machine gun them or something? Or?
Well, it wasn't machine guns, but it was just all the town folk came with their hunting weapons and everything and just started shooting everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You know, they didn't shoot you, they lynched you. It was just, Now, the Freetown wasn't as... I think Rosewood was 300 people that got killed. Freetown, where I was from, was like 40 or 50 people that got killed. But still.
Still.
Yeah, it's significant. And stuff like that used to happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way of just trying to keep... Even though they were free, trying to keep them in their place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just subjugate people.
Well, it's like we said at the opening of the show, it's a power play.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, and you know, we're already in dark territory talking about massacres, but my grandfather is a Civil War historian, and on both sides, like he studies the tactics of generals on both sides and the reasons and the economics and the, you know, the social and all of this stuff. And I remember being quite young, like 12 or 13 years old, and him saying something along the line, because I'm like, certain things are just unfathomable to a grown-up, but much less to a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, why couldn't they just let them go live off in the woods somewhere and do their own thing? Like,
right.
Like, why all the hate? Like, just... Like, and that's my logical mind being like, if you don't want them around, make them go away.
Yeah, just let them
just
be.
Leave them alone. And he's like, but that's not how things work. He's like, anytime you have a group of people that are underrepresented, there's a manipulation, there's a power in that. And there's people that are going to swing in and try to use that power. You can control people. You can move them to do things that they wouldn't normally do.
Right.
And it's always this fear of the other that keeps you from focusing on the people who actually are controlling you.
Right.
And he's like, they've been a scapegoat since day one. And it's like, I've always remembered that. And it's just like so dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just dark forces everywhere.
Right.
You know?
It is all about power. Usually.
Yeah. Votes.
Yeah. Okay, let's move back in time a little bit to 1191. Mm. It's a cool sounding year, ain't it? The Massacre at Acre. In the aftermath of the fall of Acre, during the Third Crusade, Richard the Lionheart attempted to negotiate terms of surrender with the Saracens. Richard wanted to exchange over 3,000 captured prisoners for the True Cross, as well as a hefty ransom and imprisoned Christians. The True Cross was believed to be the actual physical cross upon which Jesus Christ was crucified. You know, during the Crusades, a lot of that had to do with just relics, the search for the Grail, that kind of thing. After much delay by Saladin and the Muslims, Richard, frustrated and angered, personally marched his prisoners to a hill called Adea. So basically, he had 3,000 prisoners, said, hey, give me these guys back for the cross. The Muslims said, I'll go to hell. You know, you're not going to do anything. So he marched them out to a hill and ordered the slaughter of over 3,000 prisoners, women and children included. They were all mercilessly beaten to death, axed and cut down within eye range of the Muslims to let them see that he wasn't messing around. A Muslim force so enraged by this act attempted to charge the Crusader lines but was repeatedly beaten back, allowing Richard and his army to retire in good order. Thus concluded one of the most unusually ruthless battles, massacres even by Crusade standards. That's pretty hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's one thing to take a couple and say, this is what we're going to do to the rest of them. He just said, screw it. Put all his cards on the table, took all 3,000 out, and said, okay, fine, you don't want to do it? There we go. And killed everybody.
He must have had a lot of men to be able to do all of that, and then also
fight
repel
back.
An attack.
Yeah, fight back the folks that came after him. All right, 1282 in Sicily, the Sicilian Vespers Massacre. The Sicilians were fed up with being occupied by foreign forces, decided to go all out on the revolt against the French in the 20-year reign over the Kingdom of Sicily. With tensions high, thousands of Sicilians gathered for Easter Monday services and festivities at the Church of Santa Spirito in Palermo. 200 armed French troops soon arrived to frisk the Sicilians in search of any weapons. You know, laws gathered the Sicilians, way of subjugating people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff wasn't allowed normally. Though emotions were close to boiling over, the Sicilians obeyed the French occupiers. A Frenchman unwisely took the opportunity to grope a young maiden, thrusting his hand down her blouse. Death to the French was cried out as young man took the Frenchman's sword and killed him right there on the spot. Chaos ensued, and of course, 200 French soldiers against the entire city. They were a little outnumbered. And They killed all 200 French soldiers right there on the spot. The War of the Sicilian Vespers had begun, and the savagery would continue for many years. It's another one of those. Just, this crazy, dude. Imagine how stupid you have to be. You're 200, you're outnumbered probably 10 to 1. You decide to go ahead and try to start shit. And all you got is a sword. You know, you don't want to have a machine gun or anything. You got a sword. You know how easy it is to overpower somebody with a sword if you got the right numbers.
Well, exactly. Even when you have guns, we've talked about it before, like with World War One, how you're facing down no man's land and these cannons and artillery, and you turn back and your commander has a revolver. It's like he can only shoot six of you at best. It's like, let's take over this trench and stop this crap. Like, let's go home. You know, like, this is ridiculous.
Okay, let's go to 1685 and the Bloody Assizes. The Bloody Assizes were a series of trials conducted by Chief Justice George Jeffreys in the aftermath of the Battle of Sedgemoor, which concluded the Monmouth Rebellion in England. After the Duke of Monmouth was executed for treason, over 1,400 of his supporters and fellow rebels were imprisoned, tried, and executed, or deported to a penal colony in the West Indies. They liked just shipping off their ne'er-do-wells, didn't they? Most were executed for treason via burning at the stake, though at least one woman's sentence was commuted to beheading. The law recognized no distinction between principals and accessories in treason, so any way you were involved, it was taken care of. Altogether, 300 rebels were hanged, drawn, and quartered. 144 more were hanged, with their corpses being displayed around the country as a warning to those who attempted to rebel against the king. So basically, it was like, the last people that did it, this is what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 800 were sent to the West Indies.
To get eaten, pretty much.
Right. You notice a certain theme to subjugation?
Yeah.
With all these massacres?
Well, in a lot of cases, it's people rising up against their people.
Right.
And again, it's a power play. And then, you know, you use massacre, you know, you kill a bunch of people and everybody else is afraid.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Crusades. And it's actually rather funny because we started off the episode talking about the Vikings. Like those guys were no stranger to a massacre.
They were into pillaging. Pillaging was a big part of their lives.
But it points out, like in history, where do you think the concept of the knight came from? Where do you think the concept of, like, what? Not why did we have the Crusades, but why were so many men willing to arm up and go fight? Do you have, like, any real idea? After a generation of fighting the Vikings, the Saxons got really, really good at war. They just, once the Vikings left, they were unemployable.
Mm-hmm.
So you had all of these nobles that had all of these prior peasants that had been basically awarded titles and had experience in battle. They were worthy soldiers, but they were pretty much useless for doing much anything else. And in order to kind of keep them in line, this was an evolution over time. It didn't just happen. It wasn't like some government program. But basically, they were like, oh, we've got all of these basically soldiers for hire, and we've got all of these, because if you look back in history, it wasn't like the Muslims were just sitting over there minding their own business. They were always causing trouble to... They were always pushing west and into Christendom, basically. And finally, they were just like, hey, we've got all of these guys who are really good at fighting and they don't have anything to do. Let's go take care of that business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of the Crusades started, was like, we've got a trained army that's pretty much useless for anything else. Let's use it.
Right.
And while they were out fighting the Crusades, that's whenever the whole, like, romantic stuff started. You know, the poets would write about the chivalrous knight,
mm-hmm.
and how he was, you know, good to the ladies and all of this stuff. So whenever they came home, they were basically seen as heroes, and they had titles and lands and became nobles and that kind of stuff. But the reality of it was, where do you ship off all of your soldiers of fortune?
Right.
You send them to war somewhere. You keep that war going on.
Yeah.
You make some money. The sword builder makes money, and the armor maker.
It keeps the economy.
The horse breeder, and the saddle maker, and the armor maker, and the wagon maker, and like all of these. The war machine keeps turning. And, yep. It's been going on for a long time.
We're jumping on to the Holocaust for a second. You know, one of the worst, I guess you could say, single group or one event slayings they had was the Babi Yar massacres, which occurred in the Ukraine. Considered the worst massacre of the Holocaust. From September 29th to September 30th, just 2 days, 33,711 Jews, Soviet POWs, Gypsies, and Communists were killed in this one city in Ukraine, Kiev, Ukraine. That is insane.
I think that was in one of our history segments before.
That is just... there's pictures of just dead bodies in this ravine, and it's just... You know, it's not like they dropped a bomb and killed them. Mm-hmm. They went around killing these people with their guns. 33,000. That's a lot, dude.
That is a lot.
That is just, you know, nuts.
The numbers get so high, it's hard to think of every individual person. Like, every single one of those people was scared.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like you think about, I don't know, the Megadeth lyric. You know, you kill one man, you're a murderer. You kill 1,000, you're a conqueror. You kill them all, you're a god.
Yeah. Moving on to Asia, which they've had their share also, trust me. There's something called the 228 incident, which occurred in Taiwan. February 28th, 1947. It was an anti-government uprising. Government troops came in and killed 30,000 civilians.
Just when was that?
Them all out. That was in 1947.
Yeah.
They didn't play either, dude. I mean, it's just it's subjugation of the people. That's what it's all about.
Oh, well, there's the Soviet purges. Like, that whole communist waking up throughout the world. You don't even think about it much now because so many communist regimes have fallen, and it's almost sort of romanticized at this point. And everybody likes to talk about socialism, and they just didn't do it right. It's like, well, how many millions of, I mean, in the 20th century alone, it's almost like a half a billion of people were killed by their own governments.
Right.
Not by somebody else's government, by their own governments outside of war.
Right.
Like almost half a billion people. Those numbers are just unfathomable. You just can't... Like, where do you bury that?
Yeah, well, this next one we're going to speak of, the... this one is called the... What is it? The Hamadian Massacres, which was committed by the Ottoman Empire, which the Ottoman Empire still denies that this actually happened, but... It's believed that the total number of deaths of Armenians from this particular incident between 80 to 300,000. What they do know is that 50,000 children were left orphaned. So think about that. That's the children. That's 100,000 people right there. If you look at two parents each child, all to reassert pan-Islamism as the state ideology. Basically, it was just trying to crush it. One of those religious things.
Yep.
Which religion has spawned some of the bloodiest, most brutal wars. And the longest wars that we've ever seen.
And it's all because of agriculture.
Yeah. A lot of it is.
No, it's actually... I was listening to something not too long ago. One of my multiple podcasts that points out that... Pretty much the dawn of the agriculture is whenever... Humans actually had to start paying attention to the weather for their survival. Because before, you're hunting, you follow tracks. If it's raining or it's cold, you kind of know. You can look at the trees. You're a hunter gatherer. You know, you know at the seasons that this is when berries grow, and this is, you know. And if you're more interested in like how this works, you can kind of look at some of the like the modern diet fads, kind of like paleo and stuff, where they point out like a hunter-gatherer outside of all society, but just kind of like a mountain lion. What does it do? It hunts, it eats, it rests, it hunts, it eats, it rests, it breeds, it follows its own cycles. You have a bear that's like an omnivore. They'll eat berries, they'll eat honey, they'll hunt, they'll eat trash, whatever, but they pretty much follow the same cycles, and we're no different. The difference is once we figured out how to fence off land and make it produce, then suddenly we needed sunny days, and we needed rain, and we needed certain conditions to be right, and those conditions aren't always there. So whenever you're like, okay, well, have I done something unfavorable?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't it doing what it's supposed to do? I must have done something wrong, because we're also rational.
Right.
We think in terms of linear and cause and effect. Obviously, I did something wrong because my crops aren't growing. How can I fix this? You know? And all of that spawns from agriculture.
Right.
If it wasn't for somebody figuring out how to rope off some carrot fields or whatever, we'd still be just like having sex all day and eating fruit. And in true human style, we figured that we could improve on that.
Oh man. Okay, so continuing with the Armenians and the troubles they had with the Ottoman Empire. In 1909, there were 15,000 to 30,000 Armenians were killed at the hands of the Ottoman Empire. All Armenian Christians, essentially the Ottomans, the anti-Christian establishment there, just kind of uprose, and there were just mob riots everywhere, just attacking Armenian Christians and killing them. It get the masses on your side and get them to believe in something, and they're going to run with it.
Yeah.
How are we doing on time?
We got time for one more.
Okay. Well, we shall close with the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre.
Bartholomew, huh?
Yeah. Focused on the Huguenots, French Protestants.
His last name Simpson?
No. During the French Wars of Religion, like I said, religion is something that just, think about the Spanish Inquisition. Death toll estimates have ranged from 5,000 to 30,000, resulting from Roman Catholic mob violence. The Inquisition.
Right. That was in the Inquisition? Yeah.
Well, it was similar to the Inquisition. It was
right.
The Roman Catholics just trying to subjugate the Protestants.
It's again, power.
Yeah.
That's the Protestant revolutions in Europe, when after the Martin Luther and then the printing press. Prior to that, nobody owned a Bible. You went to church, and the church told you what God said.
Mm-hmm.
And once you could acquire a Bible, you could read it and see what it said for yourself. That took a lot of power out of the hands of the church, and they did not like that.
Right.
And a lot of that Anabaptist stuff was, you know, it's like the Protestants were no less pious. It wasn't like they were like, oh, we're suddenly a whole bunch of atheists. It was just like, whoa, wait a second. You want us to go to war because God says so, but it says right here, thou shalt not kill. What are we supposed to do? And then the church was like, we don't want to have to think about this. We want to snap our fingers and have you go.
Right.
Because if you're asking questions, that breeds discontent.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have that. So their response to that was so violent that the over response was even more violent, and they're still fighting about it today.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, I don't think I've ever actually met a, this is an incendiary thing, but I don't think I've ever met a Catholic that actually really, truly, deeply believed in God. But they believe in a whole lot of documents.
Yeah.
They're like, this is the way it's supposed to be. And you're like, but it's all pivoting on your relationship with the supreme being, and they're like, ah, that's kind of some, that's all
secondary to the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, dude, like, whatever, have fun at church, bro.
It's like Bill Burr said, you're telling me if I pray to God here, I gotta go to church on Sunday for him to hear me? You know, I can't pray to him from right here and even the other same stuff that I'm saying, you know, it's
Yeah.
Church doctrine is just that. Church doctrine. It's a control thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's, you know, massacres have to this day still occur. The biggest reason for it is subjugation of the people and control. You know, that's the main reason that massacres occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's always government-based, too.
Yeah.
Because you're never, like, you and I are not going to be, like, if you and I decided that we were going to just kind of go up and down the street and, like, stab people, we might be successful getting, like, 6 or 7 people stabbed.
I think it's out pretty quick.
But before we got taken out quick.
Yeah.
Like, there's no individual that has that kind of power. And even the ones that do kind of live in the, like, Charles Manson. Like, he staged a massacre. But he didn't kill he didn't kill 40,000 people.
It didn't shift the balance of power.
Right. Or even public opinion, really.
Right.
Made them scared of hippies. It didn't.
Yeah. it caused a mass hysteria to a certain degree, but not to the degree that the ones that we talked about tonight did.
All right. What a way to ring in the new year.
That's right. That's our way of starting off 2018. You got to get used to that. Don't forget.
I'm telling you, dude.
Even though a 7 is easy to convert to an 8.
So it is. It won't make me rewrite a check or something. Do you write checks anymore?
Occasionally, for work. It's the only time we still have a checkbook.
All right, one check, and it's to my daughter's nanny. Just because she prefers it that way. She gathers up the checks. She deposits them. She has a nice little ledger. Like, hey, that's cool. But that's person to person. Everything else is online.
Right. It's like, well, I got to write checks to my sole proprietorship vendors that I have to do 1099s for.
No direct deposits?
Not with them, no.
Oh, you can't do it. Yeah. Well, I guess that's going to be an episode. What was that, number 65?
Yes.
Scary Dad Podcast. Horrible massacres.
Is 69 going to be a Beavis and Butthead retrospective?
Dude, it needs to be.
Just toilet humor the whole time.
It really does need to be. We need to plan what we're going to talk about. If not Beavis and Butthead, then something.
I don't know if you ever saw the movie Goon. Have you ever seen Goon on Netflix?
Uh-uh.
It is an excellent, excellent movie. I highly recommend it. But it's a little independent film put together. You'll recognize some of the actors. Eugene Levy's in it, even. But it's about this guy that, just because of his ability to fight, ends up becoming a minor league hockey player. Just because he's a goon. And the day he goes to try out for his first team, he gets a call. The coach wants him to come to this minor league team to a tryout. The coach says, just need to know what your number is going to be. And his goofy friends in the stands watching him try out. He starts hollering, pick 69. It's hilarious. He looks at the coach. He's like, is that number taken?
Yeah. Like, you can't use 69 on anything anymore.
No, not with Snickers from the 12-year-old contender. <No. laughs>
Well, that's it, man. Y'all keep it scary.
Later.